have tested positive for the virus. Most are crew members. And for now, the vessel is without a port of entry. Vice President Mike Pence says the ship will be directed toward an unspecified non-commercial port where all 3,500 on board will be tested for the virus. Elsewhere in the world, other cruise ships are looking for ports as well. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization says all nations should make containing the coronavirus their top priority. The outbreak has spread to more than 90 nations and killed more than 3,400 people, with the number of confirmed cases topping 100,000. In the U.S., the latest fatalities are in the state of Florida. Two people who had recently traveled abroad have died. They bring the number of known coronavirus deaths in the country to 17, and these were the first on America's East Coast. There is a special warning for elderly people in the U.S., and the AP's Julie Walker has that report.
The CDC says older people and those with underlying health conditions are more likely to have serious illness from the coronavirus and should stay away from those who are sick and wash their hands often when they do go out. During a lab tour on Friday with President Trump, CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield said mitigation complements their goal.
We need to stay committed to containment, and I still believe containment and control is the goal.
For most people, COVID-19 causes only mild or moderate flu-like symptoms, such as fever and cough. I'm Julie Walker.
China's defense ministry denies a report that one of its Navy ships fired a laser last month at an American Navy surveillance plane over the Philippine Sea, far to the north and west of the South China Sea, which China claims virtually in its entirety. From Washington, this is VOA News. With a ceasefire between Russia and Turkey in Syria's Idlib province just a few days old, questions are being asked about what makes this agreement different from so many that have failed in the past 9 years. Reuters correspondent Saraya Ali has a report.
Idlib has been the center of a tug of war in recent weeks, with Moscow and Ankara, which back opposing sides in the war, edging closer to direct confrontation. Shaky ceasefires that bring relative calm have punctuated Syria's nine-year war, but all have collapsed. For this deal, Russia and Turkey have agreed to set up a security corridor along Idlib's main highway and to conduct joint patrols. But many say this isn't enough. It didn't establish a safe zone or say how nearly a million people displaced in the last 3 months could return to their homes.
That was Saraya Ali of Reuters. The Taliban said today its peace agreement with the United States does not alter its claim that the insurgent group's supreme leader is Afghanistan's lawful ruler, that he is duty-bound by religion to establish an Islamic government after foreign troops leave the country. The pronouncement fuels the uncertainty over the U.S.-Taliban deal signed a week ago in Qatar. It also comes a day after an American media report that Washington has intelligence that the insurgent group does not intend to abide by promises it made in the February 29th accord. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for Friday's attack that killed more than 30 people in Kabul. It happened at an event marking the death of a minority Shiite political leader, and was the first major attack in Afghanistan's capital since the United States signed the peace agreement with the Taliban. Here's Reuters correspondent Sarah Charlton.
Gunshots were broadcast live on local TV Friday as the gathering to mark the death of an ethnic leader turned to chaos. More than 50 people were injured in the largest attack on civilians in a year. Top Afghan political leader Abdullah Abdullah was at the event but escaped unharmed. The Taliban said they were not involved in the attack. But it's another deadly reminder of Afghanistan's fragile state. Several people were killed in a similar attack on the same commemoration last year, which Islamic State said it carried out. The United States has tried to spearhead efforts towards a lasting peace agreement in Afghanistan. Violence decreased before a deal was implemented last Saturday to withdraw troops, though the Taliban has since resumed attacks on Afghan forces.
President Donald Trump has fired his acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney and replaced him with a conservative Republican Congressman Mark Meadows, a strong Trump defender during the Democratic impeachment drive. Meadows is Mr. Trump's fourth Chief of Staff in just over 3 years. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
That name is final. It has been adopted by the NEC and is the one that will be given to the speaker after consultation with our three coalition partners who are in government. Then from the Council of State, the procedure has to be followed. Therefore, from there, it will be that the incoming prime minister after the departure of the current prime minister.
The Lesotho ruling party chooses its chairperson to replace outgoing prime minister, Dr. Thomas Tabane.
The whole phenomenon has been shocking. Zambians are not used to this kind of situation, although now it's dying down. I think for 3 months we have been experiencing some insecurity.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu expresses concern about ongoing mob attacks.
We convince ourselves that as of now we have no peace at all, so it can only be brought in. Sierra Leone have several crossing points. However, there are three main points of entry. So these three main points of entry, you now have full screening mechanism with regards to temperature waves.
And the government of Sierra Leone implements measures to combat the coronavirus. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The National Executive Committee of Lesotho's ruling party, the All Basotho Convention, or ABC, has chosen a replacement for retiring Prime Minister Dr. Thomas Tabane. The group chose the party's chairperson, Samuel Rapapa, to replace the Prime Minister, who plans to step down in July. To learn more about the choice of a replacement for the Prime Minister for the Kingdom of Lesotho, I reach Max Masuecha, a member of the National Executive Committee and spokesperson for the ruling ABC party.
We did initiate as the NEC the three names of which members of the NEC who are in parliament were nominated, and those names were given to the parliamentarians in the caucus, including the NEC. The NEC in its sitting, it resolved to follow the seniority, which was the first option proposed by the parliamentarians. We therefore, in terms of the seniority, the national chairperson of the party, Mr. Samuel Rapapa, was nominated and confirmed by the NEC as the person who will succeed the current prime minister when he steps out. That was the decision of the NEC per the proposal by the members of parliament in the caucus.
So is this decision by the National Executive Committee of the All Basotho Convention final?
Yes, it's final, because actually even the current Prime Minister says so that no, when he announced that his departure, he said, no, I'm waiting for my National Executive Committee and the members of the AB, my party, to give me the name of the person who will succeed me so that the due process has to follow with the current the coalition partners, including the Council of State, of which we have to advise the king to appoint the nominated person by the leading coalition partner. That's how it works. Therefore, that name is final. It has been adopted by the NEC and is the one that will be given to the speaker after consultation with our three coalition partners who are in government. Then from the Council of State, the procedure has to be followed. Therefore, from there, it will be that the incoming prime minister after the departure of the current prime minister.
But Max, Mr. Rapapa is being opposed by two prominent members in the current government, and they're saying that they will not let NEC, of which you are a prominent member, bully them into accepting what they described as a lunatic for prime minister. How do you resolve this?
No, we are not going to listen to those inquests. The members of the party elected the current National Executive Committee to lead the party. We were not elected to be the proxy of the delinquent. Therefore, as the NEC, we are taking the decision to guide the party and its membership in terms of the constitution. Therefore, whoever does not accept that is his own business. but the decision has been taken. Unfortunately for him, whether he likes it or not, in Parliament there will be no voting, because the name will be taken to the Council of State on the basis of the consolidation of the coalition partners. The numbers which the coalition partners have are still in majority in Parliament. Now, therefore, whoever within the ABC circle who does not want to adopt that name, we are expecting such a person to see him crossing from the government faction or side and follow the opposition or go to the crossbench. When he just makes noise, we are not going to be entertaining that.
If there's dissenting voices within the ABC coalition is not resolved, don't you think it will create fissures within the party and possibly undermine the unity within the rank and file of the membership, and by so doing, give the other opposition groups an opportunity perhaps to win in the next election?
No. That cannot happen. The ABC has 52 members in Parliament. Therefore, we cannot say the noise made by the two members of Parliament can deter us from taking that decision. Therefore, that decision is final and answered.
Has Prime Minister Dr. Thomas Tabani accepted the choice of the National Executive Committee, and what's next in this process?
No, he has to. The decision has been taken by the NEC, of which he is a member. Therefore, he can't do otherwise. He will have to comply with the decision of the National Executive Committee. It is there.
Max Masoecha is a member of the National Executive Committee and spokesperson for the ruling ABC party. He spoke with me from the Lesotho capital, Maseru. Zambian President Edgar Lungu has expressed concern about mob attacks which have left about 50 people dead. The president says some traditional and church leaders are to blame for the attacks. His comments come after suspects accused of spraying chemicals on citizens termed gassing were caught and in some cases beaten to death without trial. When sprayed, the chemicals reportedly make both adults and children unconscious. Opposition groups have pressured the president to speak to the nation after accusing him of failing to lead and assure the masses. For reaction, I reached presidential spokesperson Isaac Chipambe in the capital, Lusaka.
The whole phenomenon has been shocking. Zambians are not used to this kind of situation. Although now it's dying down. I think for 3 months we have been experiencing some insecurity as far as gassing is concerned, what people are calling gassing. This is where people are sleeping at night, and then some unknown people come in their residence and spray some chemical, some unknown chemical. That's how it started, although there were also some killings in a town called Chingola in the Copper Belt province. Some people were initially killed before this gassing started. And then after that, we had mob reactions where people are now keeping whoever they found walking at night. The residents were killing people at night in reaction to the spraying of chemical.
Isaac, the president is said not to be happy with some church officials and some traditional leaders who he said are to blame for a recent spate of mob attacks that have left at least 50 people dead. So what is the president doing about this?
What has happened is that for some years now, especially, I don't want to say Copper Belt, but it has been prominent there as well. We have had a group of preachers. They are kind of charismatic preachers. They have a strange way of preaching and with quite a good number of following. But I think what made it worse was that while they were preaching, some of them were showing videos of people being attacked. But these videos were not shot in Zambia. These were foreign videos which they were showing their congregants. And then people will believe, as you know, social media. People will believe and then they react to that. So that wasn't helping. So I think that's where the president is trying to say that even the kind of the style of preaching is not helping at all. And you know, there's also in some of these communities, there is also superstition and so forth, which is being encouraged by some of these preachers.
The present critics are saying that when this thing started a week or two ago, they said the president should address the nation to assure the nation that his administration is on top of some of these issues to punish the perpetrators. Do you think that criticism is justified?
You know, much as people say the president should address the nation, the president has been talking to the nation on different forums. But in our country, there's a belief that the president should have a press conference. The president should address the nation. They don't believe that the president can still talk to the people at different fora. So the push initially was that the president should have a press conference. The next thing was that the president should, when the press conference happened, the next issue now is with the coming of these same attacks, was that the president should address the nation. But the president had been talking to the people at different forums in the form of rallies and so forth. And he even talked about these same issues. He even put a bounty that whoever who arrests the mastermind will be given some money. All that was the president speaking to the people. But more importantly, the president really wanted to get to the bottom of the issue before he spoke to the people.
Some of the critics were saying that the government just want to blame the opposition for these attacks, saying that it appears that the attacks are politically motivated and that perhaps the opposition is behind it to undermine the government. And that is why the president has waited all this time in order to blame them for the so-called gassing issues and subsequent reaction of the mob attacks. How do you respond to such assertion coming from the opposition?
I think the president has always avoided to make it a political issue. Otherwise, the culprits in this may be lost. So the president has allowed the security, the investigating wings, to get to the bottom of the issue rather than to politicize it. But while that was happening, while the president was seemingly quiet, allowing security to work, the opposition were in the forefront saying, no, he wants to arrest us. No, because they don't want us to stand next year. So there are all these speculations which were strange.
Isaac Chipampe is the spokesperson for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Sierra Leonean government is implementing new measures in an effort to address cases of the coronavirus wave to come to the shores of the West African country. Health Minister Professor Alpha Wuri says his organization is also working closely with the Information Ministry and journalists to educate Sierra Leoneans as part of its sensitization efforts. To learn more about the country's preparations, I reached Professor Alpha Wuri, the Sierra Leonean Health Minister, in the capital of Freetown.
We were exposed to the hemorrhagic fever of Ebola some 3 years back. It has developed a level of, an increased capacity among the health sector. So with regards to corona, there are certain steps that are already recognized as ways and means of preventing it to come into country, and also certain steps with regards to isolation and treatment if it ever gets into the country. With regards to preparedness for entry, we convince ourselves that as of now we have no case at all, so it can only be brought in. Sierra Leone have several crossing points between Guinea, Republic of Guinea, and Liberia. However, there are 3 main points of entry. So these 3 main points of entries, we now have full screening mechanism with regards to temperature.
Talk to me about the level of education or using all forms of media to reach the people, to conscientize them or educate them about efforts that you are making to prevent any cases from coming to Sierra Leone?
Well, the ministry has, as part of its mandate, health education. However, the unit of health education is a small unit and does not have a full-fledged national outreach. So we have partnered with the Ministry of Information and Communication, of which you have Mr. Rado Suare, that has links to the media world. And we had a meeting on Monday in which we summoned the Association of Journalists, the media teams, the entertainers, all to one meeting. They have just developed a strategy of what to do, and I think by this weekend, the plan will be rolled out. In the country, we put a lot of premium on traditional rulers. You know, during the Ebola fight, all the bylaws were made by paramount chiefs. And it was the paramount chiefs that really came up with the rules and regulations for us to end Ebola. We would like to use that as lessons learned. And we would go again, and there will be a major meeting here on the 12th, in which every paramount chief would be in Freetown, and full-fledged explanation would be given to them about how this thing is transmitted, what they should do, what they should encourage their citizens to do as well.
Prof, I wanted to ask you something, because you spoke about something earlier about infrastructure. Do you think you would be able to use that existing infrastructure or improve on the infrastructure to handle any such cases that might come to the shores of Sierra Leone?
What exists as military 34 hospital is the top of the line. However, it would not be enough. We would have to do not similar but much smaller entities at Lungwe and at the other two crossing points from Canberra and Liberia. The military has also been contracted to do so. BOQs are going to be done and these treatment centers. However, we will try and keep cases as much out of the city as possible. And we are now doing not to the same level as the one at 34 Hospital, but one that is scientifically adequate for us to do the work at the border crossing points.
Now, with the practices of the people, how is the education going to go to change the mindset or perhaps improve upon how they practice funerals and all that stuff, their usual practices? How can they change or amend that style to ensure that if such cases come to Sierra Leone, it will be abruptly or reduced sharply?
I want to let you know that this time the awareness is very high. And now, if you mistakenly want to shake the hand of somebody, you will see them physically move away from you. All of a sudden, people do not go with face masks, but handkerchiefs are being sold. Tissues are out. We now know that we cannot take any risk at all. But as I said, we have not been able to educate the masses immediately yet. As I said, we have just linked up with the Ministry of Information for them to take the message out for us in a much more effective way. And we think in the next week or so, it will now be in most places. There will be songs. There will be skits being done on it. And people will know. It will not take as much a time as it took for the Ebola then.
Professor Alpha Wuri is the Sierra Leonean Health Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, or SPLMIO, says it is looking forward to a genuine partnership with President Salva Kiir in the formation of the much-anticipated transitional government. This after the party's leader, Dr. Riek Machar, agreed with the president to share the ministerial positions in the run-up to the formation of the government scheduled for next week. To learn more about the latest development, I reach Manasseh Zindu, the SPLMIO's chairperson of the National Committee for Culture, Youth Empowerment and Sports.
What is happening now is we are waiting for the announcement, which will be the formation of the executive and also the appointment of the governors. Once the executive is in place, the executive, the revitalized transitional government of national unity, will take on the task of implementing the remaining chapters of the agreement, such as putting up the hybrid court, the truth and the reconciliation, and also key is implementing the security arrangement, which has not been completed yet. That is the training of the training of the unified force and their deployment.
So is the SPLM-IO saying that you are not satisfied with the security arrangement currently in South Sudan? And what do you think can be done to meet some of your requirements?
Ideally, in the absence of the unified force in place, the SPLM-IO would have preferred that a regional protection force is deployed in South Sudan to fill in the vacuum that is supposed to be filled by the unified force. Now that the unified force is not yet in place, it is still a matter of concern to the SPLM-IO. However, the leadership of the movement knows it better, and the leadership of the movement is in talks with the president to find a suitable situation for us to move forward.
Talking about moving forward, the South Sudan Opposition Alliance has rejected the three ministries allocated to its coalition and warned they may not participate in the national unity government, which could undermine, if not resolved quickly, the entire peace process and the formation of the revitalized transitional unity government. Are you concerned about this development?
Yes, we are concerned. The South Sudan Opposition Alliance, known as SOA, is a very important partner and a party to the agreement. It would not be good for them to be out of the formation of the new government. I would call on the government to listen to the concerns of SOA and find a mechanism with them on how to share with them ministries that would make them contented so that we can move forward together.
So what's next in the line of the formation of the transitional unity government?
I think there's behind the scene negotiations with groups such as SOA that is not satisfied yet with what has been allocated to them. I hope this can be concluded quickly. There's also talks with the other groups known as the Old Out. The talks were going on in Rome. I understand because of the coronavirus situation at the moment, the talks is being shifted, I think, to Belgium or to another venue. I think it is also important that those groups talked with quickly, and that they are also put on board, so that as we begin to move forward, when the new government is formed, there's no group that is left out of the arrangement.
Manasseh Zindo is the SPLM-IO's chairperson of the National Committee for Culture, Youth Empowerment and Sport. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Thank you. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the UN Refugee Agency Friday launched an appeal for $621 million to assist nearly 1 million refugees who have fled violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo, seeking safety in neighboring countries. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The situation in DR Congo remains one of Africa's most complex and long-standing humanitarian crises. Hopes that violence would lessen following the peaceful transition of presidential power after December 2018 elections have not materialized. The situation in the eastern part of the country is particularly serious. The UN Refugee Agency says the humanitarian and security situation there continues to deteriorate. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balor says tens of thousands of new refugees are fleeing for their lives across borders to escape ongoing armed conflict and intercommunal violence.
Since the beginning of 2019, we have seen around 100,000 refugees seeking refuge in the neighboring countries, some 40,000 of those in the last 3 months. Starting from 1st of December.
Most have gone to Uganda, which is now sheltering nearly 400,000 of the refugees. Hundreds of thousands of others have fled to Burundi, Rwanda, Tanzania, Zambia, Angola, and the Republic of Congo. Balazs tells VOA the appeal also aims to assist the host countries, which he says struggle to support themselves as well as the thousands of refugees.
We have a situation where camps are overstretched in terms of their capacity. We need to do more in terms of providing refugees with shelter, but food, health, and also many of these refugees are youngsters in terms of being able to attend school. Education suffers as well.
The UNHCR says it is hoping for a better response to this year's appeal than to that of 2019. When only 22% of its $720 million appeal was funded. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An international conference on the armed conflict in southern Cameroon is scheduled to be held from March 19 to 21 in Washington, D.C. Organizers from the Coalition for Dialogue and Negotiations say the conference will focus on coming up with solutions to ending the ongoing armed conflict in the English parts of the country. The conference comes after both French President Emmanuel Macron and Cameroonian President Paul Biya agreed there's a need for an independent investigation into an attack on an English-speaking village which left at least 22 people dead. For more about the upcoming conference, I'm joined in the studio by Henry Atem and Judith Nwawa, all members of the committee organizing the conference. Hello and welcome to Nightline Africa.
Hello.
All right, so let me come to you first, Judith. What is this conference about?
Right. This conference, at its creation, we launched, that is the coalition, launched a series of consultations with key actors within the international community to get their pulse and sense of direction about the conflict. We held several meetings, engaging strategic foreign affairs ministries, parliaments, international right and humanitarian organizations, including universities. We met and talked to Southern Cameroonians on ground zero and abroad. After these meetings and from feedback from over 4,000 Southern Cameroonians, the coalition decided to hold this conference.
So what is the expected outcome of this conference, if I may ask you? Let me come to you, Harry.
Yes, thank you, Peter, for that question. What we intend doing in the conference is to bring the human capital of Southern Cameroons, professionals, experts from the academic and from practitioner fields, to actually discuss a pathway towards strengthening existing negotiations and also start the hard work of developing frameworks for post-conflict reconstruction. One thing that is good to highlight is the goal of the coalition in the first place. The coalition, a group of Southern Cameroonian professionals, both from the academic, as I mentioned, and the practitioner fields, who are dedicated to advocating and fostering negotiations to end the ongoing armed conflict and also build frameworks for post-conflict reconstruction. Now, three key principles guide the work of the coalition. One, that Southern Cameroonians have the international enshrined right to self-determination, and two, that any solution to the conflict must address the root causes, and that's why we're advocating for sincere negotiations. And the Southern Cameroonians have the right to self-defense if attacked.
Now, you made mention of Southern Cameroonians or English parts of the country having the right to self-determination. I spoke with Mr. Maurice Kamto, a presidential candidate of Cameroon in the recent presidential election. He is of the view that the right of self-determination, that process has already been carried out, and that he supports federation. What is your take on that? Let me come to you first, Judy.
One of the things that Kamto also mentioned was that a solution or a resolution cannot be forced on the people. Mm. That it's a solution has to come from what the people want. Mm. So what the coalition is asking for is for the Southern Cameroonians to be given that option for a sincere dialogue, to be able to come up with a resolution to the what is actually going on today.
But so there's a situation where when you talk about self-determination, a lot of people see that or hear that as a code word for separation to become an independent country, Ambazonia, as they call it. And they say it is non-negotiable. Let me come to you, Henry, before you continue, Judith.
Yes, self-determination does not explicitly mean separation, like others think. Self-determination is enshrined in international law. And it hasn't got any time frame. And that's why I would say Kamto is wrong to say that it has already occurred, because the law, the international law that Kamto knows so well, doesn't have any time frame. It doesn't say the self-determination expires after 1961. It doesn't say if it did, South Sudan would have been South Sudan today. Eritrea would have been Eritrea today. So the concept of self-determination is enshrined in international law that Kamto knows and can be applicable anytime, anywhere.
Now, does the conference that you're going to hold, the objective involve President Paul Biya remaining the legitimately elected president of the Republic of Cameroon, or it doesn't involve him, the outcome of this upcoming conference? Let me come to you, Judith.
The fact that Paul Biya or whoever is president of La République du Cameroun does not infringe on what the coalition and the Southern Cameroonians want. So this is a conflict now that has devolved into a conflict of sovereignty, right? And no matter who is the president of La République, that party will need to dialogue and negotiate with the warring factions in Southern Cameroon. So regardless of who is the president of our republic, that person, as far as we are concerned, needs to sit down and dialogue with the Southern Cameroonians for a resolution to the conflict. So it could be Kamto, it could be Paul Biya, but we are not going to wait for 7 years for a change in regime to be able to get that dialogue. We need it today because of what is actually going on in the country.
But the government is of the view that it has organized dialogue with everybody represented. So what dialogue, again, are you going to have? Let me come to you, Henry.
Peter, let's be sincere. The international community, including the United States, including France itself, including Switzerland, who are actually doing an initiative to actually mediate a negotiation, all agree that the grand national dialogue in Yaoundé was a non-event. It was not inclusive. It didn't involve those that have arms. And we are not talking about a protest. We are not talking about a demonstration. That had occurred 50 years ago. And I always recall when the learned barrister Agobala said in Equinox TV in Douala, that now we are talking about federation. There will be a time that you'll be talking about federation and we'll be talking about independence. And that has led us to an armed conflict between a state party and a non-state party. I mean, in my history, in my life, in my experience working within the international community, I have not seen where a government who is a party to a conflict can single-handedly address that conflict. That is why the goal of the objective of the coalition is that the government should work with the international community to have a peaceful negotiation to settle that conflict in a sustainable manner.
Let me come to you, Judith. What will your coalition do in this upcoming meeting to see a realization of your objective of having self-determination, among other things that you seek?
What we are hoping for is to come out with resolutions from the conference, which we will use as a negotiating documents to engage the international community to be able to get those key actors, including the frontline leaders, to sit and talk about a way forward. So the coalition will also produce permanent working documents for post-conflict reconstruction. And just to follow on from what Henry was saying, one of the things that have informed us to be able to come up with these conferences, as intellectuals, we are called by our consciences to engage in a meaningful way to bring an end to the armed conflict. There is an ongoing humanitarian crisis. We cannot shy away from that. You've got 1 million school children out of school for over 3 years today. You've got at least 60,000 refugees in Nigeria. You've got at least 1 million internally displaced in Cameroon. Women are having kids in the bushes. You've got women using plants, using rags as sanitary pads in the bushes. You've got killing, arrests, imprisonment, recently killings of children and pregnant women. I mean, we cannot stand by and see how a generation gets lost and there is no future.
Do you have the international backing to actualize these objectives you have enumerated? Because so far, some Cameroonians tell me the government in Yaounde has been able to resist all kinds of pressure, saying that these are internal issues that are being addressed internally. Let me come to you, Henry.
Yes, of course. Any government will do the same thing what the government of Cameroon is actually doing now. But just to say that the conference in D.C. will also have in attendance a representative from the State Department, representative from other foreign ministries, former U.S. assistants and deputy assistant secretaries of state for African affairs in the U.S., former U.S. ambassador to Africa, you know, current and former African ambassadors to the U.N., the U.S. and Canada, including heads of international rights and humanitarian organizations. So if they didn't feel that the objectives of the coalition is worthy enough, they won't be attending the conference. They won't be favorable to our invitation to say we'll come. We'll not only come to attend or observe, we want to speak in the conference.
Before we go, what should the people of Cameroon expect from this conference? Let me come to you, Judith, before we come to you, Harry.
The people of Cameroon and Southern Cameroons in particular should expect that the coalition will bring together professionals, will bring together the international community, will bring together frontline leaders for us to harness our networks, harness our intellectual capacity to be able to engage key actors within the international community to be able to, one, immediately get a ceasefire so that we are able to get peace on the ground, get kids back to school, and get some semblance of normality. In the meantime, we expect to also come up with resolutions that would engage the international community to get the warring factions to the table. That includes La République, and it should be an independent, mediated process for dialogue so that we can get each other's views.
All right. Harry.
Before I even answer that question, I want to pitch the fact that if you're a Southern Cameroonian professional living in the D.C. metropolitan area or in the United States or in Europe, you owe Southern Cameroonians a duty, a moral duty, a professional duty to contribute to processes leading up to negotiations and processes leading up to ending the war, including processes leading up to rebuilding Southern Cameroons. If we do not take measured actions, our children will continue to die. The slaughtering of our brothers, our sisters, our parents will continue. The burning of houses will continue. Our people who remain in bushes and kids will continue to be out of school. We have a moral obligation to act and engage forcefully.
We might have to continue this conversation another time because we are running out of time. Henry Atem and Judith Nawa are members of the committee organizing the conference on Southern Cameroon. They joined me live from the VOA studio here in Washington, D.C. And right now it's time for music from our African collection, and you're hearing Sokoto from Magasco. Mape will come next with Alice by Alice Dakesa, and then Baliwa from Jose Chameleon.
Jabala, Jabala, Jabula, Jabala, Familian, oh, what's up, Bula, Jabala, yes, we come so far away, Jabala, oh gosh, Jabala, there's an abode foundation, the foundation, the body bomb, intimidation, intimidation, Bakusazo, Kurite, Bakusazo, Tenete, Bakusazo, Nirite, Aliwange, Bakusazo kurete, bakusazo terete, bakusazo nyirite, baliwa ngetu kite. Baliwa, 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 baba kubendele, baliwa, baliwa. Baliwa, baliwa, wali muyala nyo bakumembele, baliwa, baliwa. Waliwo abalya kunchebere, waliwo abakuba enkebete, waliwo bahasula, hasula, hasula, get the people, ng'obulamu bamusiba enjegere, kati yatola kuki.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Douglas Impuga again, and engineer for today, Desta Wandirad, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, an intelligent enemy is better than a stupid friend. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. The Taliban.